Hey, are you ready to create reliable revenue and master every detail of your hosting business? If you want to avoid compromising all those hospitality details that you love, but still approach hosting like the business it is, we created a free class just for you. Set aside 45 minutes. We promise it's worth your time. And go watch our value-packed workshop where we go over how to master every detail of your hosting business with our foolproof hosting business mastery method that will help you avoid hosting burnout. Growing, where simply starting your hosting business isn't always easy, but it can be simple. We'll help you avoid the three big mistakes that are keeping you stuck, tired, and overwhelmed as a short-term rental host so that you have a powerful revenue stream you can actually rely on.
If you're ready to take your hosting to the next level, head on over to thanksforvisiting.me/workshop to watch this on-demand training. Or send us a DM on Instagram with the word workshop. We'll send you the link and most likely a video DM. We love those. Again, that's thanksforvisiting.me/workshop.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every successful short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, this dynamic duo has welcomed more than 2,000 guests from 25 countries, earning them over $500,000 and garnering them over 650 five-star reviews. Now they're ready to share creative ways for your listing to stand out, to serve your guests and be profitable. Each episode will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry, or Annette and Sarah will share stories about their own experiences so you can implement actionable improvements to your own rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Here are your hosts, Annette and Sarah.
Hello, listeners and viewers. We are now taking Thanks for Visiting to YouTube. I am Sarah Karakayan.
I am Annette Grant, and together we are
Thanks for Visiting. And we are so excited for today's show. We have a guest who is really going to help you navigate that influencer income.
Yeah.
How you can leverage.
The influencer inquiries, because yes, those happen.
Yes. And how you can work with them so it's win-win. Before we get to that, we are going to kick off this episode like we do every week. And that is sharing one of you who are using our hashtag, #STRShareSunday. And what happens if you use that hashtag, we are watching for it and we will share you on our Instagram on Sundays. And then we also give you a shout out here on the podcast. So Annette, who are we sharing this week?
This week we are sharing at Lakeview Landing. Again, that's at Lakeview Landing, and they are located in Georgia on Lake Lanier. We've been doing a lot of back to the basics here, and I want to say they are absolutely crushing it. When you go to their Instagram, they are giving you the outside, the inside, the reviews of their place, their story. They're doing still photos. They're doing reels, video. They're really doing a holistic job on their Instagram, giving you a really great feel of their property. The one thing I have to say, listeners, again, we're coming into a new year. They are crushing it when it comes to direct bookings. Mm-hmm. They take you directly to their website to do a direct booking with them. So kudos to Lake Lanier. And also, it's Lakeview Landing because they have like multiple landings that look over the lake. Mm-hmm. And it is, so I love that they named their property after what the highlight is. It's all of these lake views from all of their landings. So they did a wonderful job. Sarah and I are going to have to come, you know, sit on all of these different landings and look at the lake. But thank you for using the hashtag. This place is amazing. I love how much information they're giving in Instagram, but also saying, hey, come book with us direct and come stay. So I love what they've done here. Lakeview Landing, appreciate you using the hashtag, and we will be patrolling Instagram for our next STR share.
Yes.
So Sarah, let's get on to this episode.
Yeah, so very excited today to have Elise Armitage. She is the writer behind What the Fab, a travel and lifestyle blog based in San Francisco and founded in 2012. So she has been doing this for quite some time. On What the Fab, Elise shares inspiration with a pinch of zest served with a side of real talk. She is a firm believer that you can be of both substance and style, and we can second that. That is so true. At the beginning of 2019, Elise left her corporate job at Google to chase her dreams, being an entrepreneur and helping women find fabulous in the everyday. today. Elise, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so pumped to chat with you all today.
Oh my gosh. I know that our listeners are going to be either at the edge of their seat or in their car gripping their steering wheel
for so many different reasons. Wait, she worked at Google. She quit her job. Wait, she's been blogging since 2012. How does that happen? She's a travel influencer. I know you're going to be like, just there's a lot of people that you're going to be pinging ideas of them thinking bigger or what their next pivot is. So I know our listeners are going to be excited to like, wait, maybe they have one property or they want to get their first property and they're like, but I need to have this corporate job. It's helping me do all
the
things.
It's my security blanket.
So take us back though, when people just get started in something. You're blogging in 2012. Did you ever think that would turn into what it is today?
Oh my gosh. I hoped and I dreamed, but I never at that time actually thought it would turn into what it is today. Like, absolutely not. I started it when I was fresh out of grad school. I was working at my first big girl job in the city in San Francisco. And I was working at a small communications agency and the company did employee benefits communication. And I was managing all of their marketing. So I was like learning how to run an email newsletter, an editorial calendar, write press releases, blog posts. And I was like, this is so much fun. And I'm literally writing about how to get your employees engaged in your 401k program. Like, imagine if I was writing about something that I was actually personally passionate about and interested in. Like, imagine how much fun that would be. And so I decided to launch What the Fab. And I actually, the other day, I just came across some old files and it was like, my blog used to be on Blogger. Now it's on WordPress. It was like this old, you know, header that was like lots of orange and just like alarming colors. It's just like, it's so funny to see, as you know, with anything, like when you first start out, it's going to suck, but you continue to learn as you do and grow and evolve. And so it's just really exciting to see, you know, how it's evolved and changed over time. It started out first primarily focused on fashion and beauty. And now I would say 80% of my content is travel and the rest is lifestyle, fashion, home decor. We just bought our first house during the pandemic. So that was how I got started with What the Fab.
Love it.
I have so many questions about that journey. But when you started your blog in 2012, at what point were you like, this could be my full-time income. This could be what I contribute to our life.
Yeah. You know, it started as a passion project and I wasn't making any money. I think, you know, the first year I remember, I actually have somewhere in my closet here, the very first piece of jewelry that anyone ever sent me. It is the most like granny with a glue gun thing you have ever seen. But I was so excited because I was like, oh my gosh, someone else is reading my blog and they want to send me a piece of their work to feature on it. Like, this is amazing. So I keep it just because it like reminds me of those like very early, early days. And, you know, the influencer marketing landscape has obviously changed so much over the last decade. When I first started blogging, there really weren't a whole lot of networks that like connect brands and bloggers. And there weren't a ton of ways to monetize. And then over the years, things started to grow and change. And I was starting to make, you know, maybe an extra $10,000 a year, then an extra $20,000. And I was like, okay, like, you know, at the very least, I'm having so much fun doing it. And it's supplementing my income, giving me like a little bit more financial freedom. And then I would say really 2017 was when things started to take off. So it was a combination of both. My Instagram was seeing a lot of growth and the industry as a whole was seeing a lot of growth. So those two things combined, it was like there were so many more networks that like their main thing was to be an agency and connect brands and bloggers for sponsored campaigns. And brands and companies were starting to have, you know, within their marketing budget, they had a proper influencer marketing budget. So that's when I started to see like, okay, this could be my full-time gig eventually. And I'm going to like stick with it. By that time I was working at Google and I was like, I'm just going to, you know, keep working nights and weekends on this and see where I'm at a year or 2 years from now. And that was kind of my plan.
So many of our listeners have this kind of parallel stories to yours, except maybe it could be their full-time job and they're their blog, in air quotes,
is their short-term rental. Mm-hmm.
So one question I'm sure a lot of our listeners have is like, right, Elise, but when did you leave Google? Like, was it when it matched your current income included with benefits? Was it when you just were like, nope, it's either now or never, you're fed up? Yeah. When did you decide for you that it was right to take the leap?
Yeah. So for me, I kind of, in my mind was like, okay, my husband and I both are entrepreneurs. And so at that time I was working at Google and had my blog as my side hustle. And he had the opportunity to become a principal at his architecture firm. So I was like, you know, things could happen. Obviously I didn't foresee the pandemic, but I was like, things happen. I want to make sure that like, if something were to go south with the revenue that he brings in, that like I'm bringing in a healthy revenue, even if it's, you know, we're going to have to be living off of like Top Ramen for a while, I want to make sure that we can like sustain ourselves and get through any kind of bumpy times. So for me, I wanted to see my blog bring in a livable, like perhaps bare bones, but a livable salary as a side hustle. And so in San Francisco, I decided that I really wanted to see my blog bringing in like 60 to 70K. And I would feel comfortable if I could get it to that point. And it also was a combination of kind of like you were saying, like, did you just hit a point where you were fed up? And that was also a combination of it as well. I had been leading this huge program. I used to do branding and events at Google, and I was leading our International Women's Day event series. So I was the global PM. We have events around the world and a team of 50 under me working on these events, executing them. And I had to hustle to keep on top of that. And then at the end of it, there were just, you know, internal kind of like frustrations and red tape and things that I was like, I don't really want to deal with this anymore. I don't know. So I took a month off where I basically traveled after our events. And the entire month, I was like kind of trying to convince myself, like, just stick with Google for a couple more years, maybe 5 more years. That's the smart thing to do. Okay, this is fine. You know, get the PTO and the, you know, the stock and everything. The day that I got back to the office, I stepped inside the office and I was like, oh, I can't do this one more day.
Like, even though you had the plan, so, right?
Even though I had the plan, it just like, it was a gut feeling and it was so, so clear to me. So what I did was I made a plan to take the next 6 months to get everything ready. Like my LLC, like making sure things with my accountant, I was like, you know, this is happening, getting all of my like invoicing in order, my systems, my processes, and just kind of like wrapped up the year with Google. And January 2019, I put in my notice.
Love it. So excited. So you've been doing this now. You've been, what the fab is your full-time job the past, what is that?
3 years.
Yeah, going 3 years. Third year, yeah.
Number one,
sure.
Congrats. That's huge.
Thank you.
And do you regret it at all? Was it amazing? Was it perfect? Like day one? Like talk to us about that transition from corporate to your own gig.
Because I had been doing it for so long as my side hustle, and I took those 6 months to really make sure that all my processes and systems and like, you know, my potential brand partners that I had worked with before that I wanted to hit up for like new campaigns, I made this runway for myself. And then it was just all of a sudden I had, you know, all day to work on it. So it was a really smooth transition because I took that time to do that nights and weekends as I was wrapping up my time at Google. The first couple of weeks, I felt like I was just playing hooky from my day job. And then it started to like really sink in like, oh, this is my business and this is what I do full time now. And it's been super exciting. And I really haven't looked back since.
And that is just a message for our listeners, because we know there's people that are either like, they're in their car or they're at their short-term rental right now. Maybe they're painting it. Maybe they're like cleaning it. They're getting it ready for their next guest. Sometimes it's just you got to pull the plug and go all in. Because guess what, listeners? There are plenty of houses for you to host all around the world. So there's going to be there's enough places for you to plug in and host guests. But let's kind of pivot here and talk about travel and you being a travel influencer, what that means to you. And then, you know, we know we have a lot of listeners that, and a lot of members in our membership that ask us, they're like, hey, this influencer wants us to give them, you know, they want to come stay. And there's so many different levels to it. And I'm sure you can talk about that with the partnerships, because We know it can be, the ask could be, we want to come stay for free. The ask could be, we want you to actually pay us to come stay and create content. There are so many different levels. So can you start to shine a little bit of a behind the scenes of a travel influencer, what you're looking for in spaces, and when you find a space, how you would go about reaching out to them?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a travel influencer, I really, when I am going to a destination, a new destination, I am just like researching the crap out of it. I'm thinking ahead of time, what are my readers going to want to see from this location? And I'm writing multiple pieces of content all about that location. So for example, last year we went to Santorini, my husband and I. My husband is also a photographer, so that is super handy. And so I'm researching, like, I know my readers love best restaurants, not only things to do, but the whole itinerary. They really like best Airbnbs lists, best boutique hotels. So I'm already researching all of the keywords and kind of mapping that out in my head and thinking like, okay, I want to make reservations at this restaurant because it's definitely going to make this list and so forth. So there's a lot of research ahead of time that goes into it. And then it takes me a while to get up usually at least 10 pieces of content from a new destination. And from there, I'm just really focused on SEO and hoping that, you know, the Google gods pick up a few of these pieces and rank it really, really well. In terms of working with rental properties, I actually have, so I don't know if this is still the case, but like years ago, actually when I took that month off to travel, I would just message some hosts on Airbnb and like let them know what I was doing and like, would they be able to provide their rental in exchange for coverage in these several different pieces of content. And that worked out really well until Airbnb got very mad at me and said that they were going to close down my account if I kept doing that.
Okay.
So I was like, okay. But what I was able to do when that was working is include these Airbnbs into my pieces of content that a lot of them now are ranking very, very well. So like I have one, if you Google Sedona Airbnbs, my best Airbnbs in Sedona post is on the first page. So
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very.
So I'll circle back to that kind of like SEO tip in a minute.
Yeah. So I think we should have listeners write that down. Like this is, if an influencer is reaching out, this is some of the stuff you need to be looking
this
for.
This is where the value is.
They're ranking.
Yes.
Yeah. Keep giving it. This is good. This is
yes.
really good.
So that to me, if I were to kind of look at it from the perspective of the rental owner, that is much more valuable to me than an influencer that only has an Instagram account or they're primarily focused on that and their blog doesn't get a ton of traffic, because the traffic that those rentals are getting from my Sedona Airbnbs post, it's very targeted. Everyone searching for that is planning a trip to Sedona. Versus if I was to put that up on my Instagram stories right now, like, oh, look at these great Sedona Airbnbs. You know, some of my followers may or may not be planning a trip to Sedona. Mm-hmm. Some of them might like boutique hotels better than they like Airbnbs. It's just not targeted. And so with that SEO factor, it's very, very targeted. It's a high likelihood that someone is going to book from that, you know, list. They're planning a trip to Sedona and they really just want someone to curate a list for them. That's like, you know, I pick all the cute ones, obviously, like I'm picking the ones with the pool and the hot tub and the aesthetics and it's Instagrammable. And so they just want someone to be like, here's a list of 9 beautiful Airbnbs so they can pick one instead of scrolling through, you know, the hundreds or thousands of options. So if I were, you know, giving advice to someone that's getting a lot of outreach from influencers, I would, you know, I do think there is value in working with influencers that are primarily focused on Instagram. If they are in a particular city that you want to target and their demographics match that as well. So maybe you have a rental in Joshua Tree and you really want to target people in LA, like in the city. The first thing I would do is ask the influencer for a screenshot of their demographics so you can see what their top cities are.
That was going to be my first question. Can I ask them to see their demographics? Like, is that cool? Like, that's something that we could ask them for.
Absolutely.
And they wouldn't be offended. Okay. They should be firing that off all the time to people, brands
right.
or whatnot.
Especially okay. because it's, you know, it's a very like location specific business. Like if all of your followers are based in Canada and I'm in Southern California and I don't get a lot of people from Canada visiting. How is that helpful? Influencers are used to sharing those types of screenshots. Like I have a Dropbox folder that's like my age demographics, my city demographics, country, because so many brands are just going to ask for that. So I have it handy and ready to go. And especially if an influencer is asking to get paid, then absolutely. But even for an in-kind exchange like that, I think it's totally reasonable and fair to ask for those demographics. So that's the first thing I would ask for to kind of help vet, you know, influencers and decide if you want to work with them. And what else would be helpful for hosts? I think, you know, engagement these days is such a, it isn't necessarily a huge indicator of that person's reach or how well they connect with their community. So I might also ask for a screenshot of their reach. So you can see like, okay, this person has 50,000 followers, but their posts are only reaching 1,000 or 2,000. Like, is that worth it to you? And then you have a little bit more data to make those decisions.
Since we're talking about Instagram, and we've already shared with our listeners that Instagram is fleeting, right? It doesn't have that SEO longevity, that long-term quote-unquote wealth as when it comes to searchability for your property. When it comes to just Instagram, what are some, besides, okay, reach is good, they've got a great brand aesthetic, like I like what this person is saying, what sort of asks should they ask for if it's an in-kind exchange, right? Well, we'll talk about paid too, because I know our listeners
right,
are
like, I get 10 pictures and yeah, highlight on the blog post. How do they, I want to arm our listeners with like, what are things that they can, tangible things to ask for? Like, oh, I'd like to have a Dropbox with 25 pictures of my space. XYZ.
Three stories, one reel, and a partridge in a pear tree. Like, what should they ask for?
Absolutely. So I would definitely say ask for photos. I mean, that's pretty standard, I would think. And that was something that I always included was like, you can use these photos on your Airbnb listing. So I feel like 10 is pretty reasonable. And so it would be usually, typically the influencer would be the one to like edit them, make sure that they're like cropped nicely, like aesthetic and beautiful, and deliver them, like you say, in a Dropbox folder. I think asking for Instagram stories with a used to be swipe up link, now just a link, is totally reasonable. Like they could do easily, you know, it's fun to be like, oh, I'm at this beautiful space shooting. I have a whole shoot day. This is the Airbnb link for what we're at. So absolutely, that's reasonable. And then from there, it's just kind of depending on like how long is the influencer staying. I've gone to an Airbnb just for like one day to shoot because when I lived, I live in Napa now, but when I was living in San Francisco, we had a tiny apartment. And so if I had like lifestyle campaigns where I needed to shoot in a kitchen, oh my God, I was not going to shoot in my tiny galley kitchen that's like dark and dingy in San Francisco. So there was this place so beautiful. It's called Mission Loft in San Francisco. And we did this kind of like in-kind exchange for a day. And I would just knock out like 5 or 6 different brand shoots in their space using all their beautiful like bathrooms, kitchen, bedrooms. And I would include, you know, the photos for them. And it was just one day and a weekday usually. So I'm not taking up their like, you know, valuable weekend availability. And I would do one Instagram post for them. And just, I mean, it was so, it made so much sense because like, it's such a beautiful space. I wanted to share it. So I think that worked well for an in-kind partnership.
I like that. If our listeners want to reach out, let's say Sarah and I were Columbus, Ohio, and there's a few local influencers here that potentially, you know, we want to reach out to them because we're like, hey, we have this new short-term rental. We think it'd be awesome for you to come stay a night, maybe take some photos. What would you like to see in your email or DM? How should our listeners approach influencers if they're interested in doing an in-kind trade there? How can you kind of coach us through that a little bit?
For someone who is local, you could frame it as a staycation. And I think, I mean, I actually had an invitation recently that was really appealing. It wasn't for anything paid, but it was for this, like they were doing a whole like blogger trip. So it was for a rental I don't know if they have several properties or just one, but it was a rental in Memphis, Tennessee. And so they were bringing together influencers from different parts of the country for this like blogger weekend. And they had all these fun things, you know, planned, brunch and hair and makeup. And they had put together a really nice itinerary for the girls. You had to pay your own way to get there. So I would have had to have bought my own plane ticket. And then the rest of the weekend was something that they had planned. So that's one way to do it. That's like a very eye-catching thing in my inbox. Like, that sounds like so much fun. I'm going to meet other influencers. Like, you know, that is great. And then if you're looking to target people that are more local, I think just framing it as like a fun staycation, you can use it for any upcoming shoots that you may have. Because if you have a very like aesthetic space, bloggers are always looking for new backdrops and places to shoot, because like your apartment, even, you know, if you have a lot of space, you have a house and several bedrooms, it kind of starts to become the same thing, you know, okay, we've seen this wallpaper 20 times on your feed. We'd love to like change it up a bit. So offering it up in that fashion, I think could be helpful as well.
Okay. Let's talk about when an influencer, in your opinion, has the clout to ask to get paid. When does money become fair?
So if there are influencers listening to this, they might not like my response, but
that's okay.
But I, frankly, if I was an Airbnb host, I would never pay an influencer.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
You would just offer the property.
Correct.
As the interest. Yes.
Now, what if that, is that if it's like within an hour driving distance, or like, you know, what if I love Elise, I love what you talk about, and I'm in Columbus, Ohio. Like, you know, what would, if I want you to come, like I like you, what would I then pay for your flight? And then it would be like of an exchange stay, or how does that work?
I mean, you absolutely could go that route. I personally feel like there are so many talented travel bloggers that will create great content for you, that have great reach, that would gladly do it in exchange for a comped accommodation. Okay. So I really don't think that it's necessary to pay influencers. I will say, if we're kind of going to circle back to like the SEO tip, if you are trying to target really specific blog posts that are landing on the first page of Google, so let's say Columbus, Ohio, you're Googling best Airbnbs in Columbus, Ohio, and you take a look at the, you know, top 5 or 10 posts that are ranking there, that could be somewhere that potentially would make sense to pay an influencer to get included in that roundup, especially if, you know, let's say what the Fab post is ranking there. I don't currently have a best Columbus, Ohio Airbnb post.
You might soon, Elise.
Yeah, exactly. I might start working on one now. But let's say you see like, oh, what the Fab has a post about like top 10 rentals in Columbus, Ohio. Don't necessarily have a trip coming up to Columbus, Ohio, so I can't physically be there to like shoot your space and everything. So in that sense, it might make sense to offer payment for placement in that article.
Right. Because if you're going to pay for Google Ads to rank, those can be very pricey. So it kind of depends on the goal of the property. And again, the influencer's reach and what that property is like, really thinks they can do. I think I personally only know of one host that not only, you know, gave the accommodations, but then also paid on top of that. But I do know that I think hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers, and they were photographers, and they were allowed to use, like, there was a great amount of photos that were given to the host, not given, but that she paid for that stay. Mm-hmm. Because as photographers, if they would have even just come to shoot the property, it would have been, you know, 5 figures, obviously.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly, but that is something there's that one person that
but
I can
that
think
one
of
person,
specifically.
I remember, I know who you're talking about. And this is the next question for you, Elise, is okay, let's say I live in Napa. I want you to come, top whatever. And I block off a weekend. We agree, you know, maybe it's 4 weeks away. I block it off, or 6 weeks away, whatever. It's in the future. And then you cancel on me. You know, like you get sick, or like you, I don't know, you got a better deal. So how can hosts protect themselves from, because then I lose revenue, you know, I'm not going to get the photos, I'm not going to get the content, and it's probably too close, especially the size of your property and the price point of your property. It might be lost revenue, like I can't open up that weekend, or, you know, it's not guaranteed. So do you have agreements with these hosts in any, or is it just like a handshake via the Airbnb messaging app, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's a tough one, especially during COVID times, because the likelihood that somebody could get sick right before and have to cancel is like so high right now. I would say it is just kind of like a risk of that sort of potential trade. I have only had one instance that I can think of where someone asked me to sign an agreement, and you know, I'm happy to do that. The agreement didn't say like, if your trip were to get canceled, like you have to reimburse me for the cost of this Airbnb. It was just like, when you stay here, you will post XYZ afterwards, which I was like, sure. So I would say like, it is smart to have that kind of agreement in place. Typically, I've just kind of done it over email. Like, you know, I plan to post this many stories, this blog post, one Instagram post. But if you want to like really make sure that you're covered, putting it in a proper agreement that is countersigned by both parties is a great idea. But yeah, to answer your question, that is definitely just kind of like a risk of doing that type of in-kind collaboration. I think the only other thing I can think of to kind of help mitigate that is to try to see if they could do those stays over weekdays. So you're not like taking up, you know, like definitely don't do it over holiday weekends, you know, that type of thing.
What about if, and I don't know how often this happens, what if you really just want it to be the influencer and maybe their partner or their photographer or videographer, and they're like, oh, they want to all of a sudden like loop in, you know, four or five friends because you are in Sedona in a huge house or you are in, you know, Joshua Tree. Like how can, is it more of an agreement again to make sure that the influencers aren't overstaying and inviting, you know, they're not making
they're
it
not
like
throwing
a,
down at our properties.
They're not making it like a TikTok house and everyone's like, how can we confirm? Because we've had this happen too, where one person will book it and a lot of friends will come and they'll all shoot content in the space. How can we protect the properties from just making sure that it's either the one influencer or the one influencer and not their whole, they didn't turn it into their family vacation or their friend's vacation.
Right. That is such a great thing to be aware of. I hadn't even really thought of that, but I think, like you say, just kind of communicating about that up front. And I actually, if you are going to go this route of working with influencers, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to have a bunch of them there at once, but you just have to make sure that everyone has their own set of posting deliverables. So then you're getting like five Instagram posts instead of one. So just communicating that upfront, I think would be the way to go.
My team, so we manage properties for other owners, but regardless, we instruct our members and our listeners to ask for certain things from people who want to shoot in their space, whether the photographers who are, you know, getting paid by their clients to for these headshots or whatever, or their influencers. I want to make sure the person in that property, especially if it's not like just a regular overnight stay, is insured themselves and that I am listed as an additional insured on their COI, right? Their certificate of insurance. Mm-hmm. Do you get that question a lot? I mean, would you be, you're like, yeah, sure, not a big deal. Like influencers are usually business owners, right? Like they have some, they're operating under some entity and that they would have coverage like that when they're shooting other people's spaces.
It's interesting you asked that. I've only been asked about that once. And it wasn't when I was shooting in a short-term rental. I was shooting in, it was someone's house that was listed for sale. And I was working with a real estate company and they wanted some additional coverage about this like gorgeous, you know, Victorian in San Francisco. And so it was again in kind. So it was like, I could shoot there all day, get all my content. And then they wanted me to share about this listing that was, you know, for sale. And they did ask me about the insurance piece. And I was like, I don't have any kind of insurance. Like, you know, my business is a separate entity. It's an LLC, but I mean, it's just me over here. You know, I'm not doing any like large scale production. No one's going to get, you know, a huge lamp or light that falls on them. Like, it's just me and my husband. So they're like, okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know because like the questions that we're bringing up, it's so listeners, it's so much about your property too. And what Elise is talking about is like she said, it's her and her husband. You really have to make sure you understand what the ask is. If someone is, you know, wanting to use the property, if you're going to do this stuff in kind, dig in. Mm-hmm. I know I've had a drone in one of my lofts one time. There was a ton of equipment, and people do, you know, whatever they say it's going to be, you just really want to confirm with them what they're going to be using it for. What type of influencer are, hey, another thing, listeners, find out what kind of influencer they are. We had, you know, there are X-rated things going on, and your property might show up on, you know, certain sites. So really you need to investigate, you know, what the property is going to be used for.
I will say, at least too, and you know, I'd be interested to see what your feedback is here, is even if it's just you and your husband, things can still happen. And listeners, you need to make sure that your insurance, which is usually not regular homeowner's insurance, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be covered for short-term rentals. And if it's not a regular overnight stay, is it covered? You know, right. If they were to find out that Elise is there shooting content for which, you know, you monetize your blog, how does that work? If you do trip and fall or your camera shatters or you do break something, you know what I mean? Like, you just want to make sure that you're being covered. And so being on a photographer or a videographer or an influencer's certificate of insurance as additional insured, make sure that, you know, you're covered should anything happen.
And this is one of those ideas, listeners, that if you are having someone come and stay, you still want to have them book the stay in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. You do want there to be some sort of financial.
Does that happen, Elise? Like, do they have you booked?
Back and forth. Yeah, like we would like them to be booked either on our, like, you know, booking platform or on an Airbnb or Vrbo. Do people ask you to do that just to make sure, like, the reservation's there, the insurance is kicked in? Talk to us about that, even if it's in kind.
Yes. In the past, that's exactly what we did. We would book it through Airbnb and they would just do like the special, you know, rate. It'd be either like $0. Sometimes I would pay for the cleaning fee, which I'm happy to do. Perfect. So that's another tip. But yes, and I prefer to have it done that way as well, because then I know I'm not going to have nowhere to stay when I'm in Copenhagen and like supposed to be working with this Airbnb. So I definitely prefer to do it that way as well.
Oh, I think that is a key to this episode is you can definitely, and if an influencer isn't willing to do that, you guys, if they're not willing to book on Airbnb, because that way, you know, you have like their account, or let's say they want to book direct, they're still like, they've got some skin in the game. There's, you know, financially they're invested something. I love the cleaning fee idea of like, it, because then that keeps you on your toes too. And obviously we have to pay to have the place clean so that's taken care of. I love that idea.
Even your reputation as an Airbnb user, right? At least you probably want to get that five-star review in exchange as well. So it's just, not that you wouldn't be in your best behavior, especially as an influencer with a reputation for your brand, but your Airbnb account or your Vrbo account matters too. So although we do here at Thanks for Visiting, we encourage direct bookings, which if you have that, I mean, that's great too. But that's just another thing that you can leverage or just ensure that you're getting.
And like Elise said, that way, you know, your calendar's booked. You're not like writing it down in your notebook and then forget. And like, oh, you know, it's just always better to have everything documented for both the influencer and the host. Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. I love that idea though, that they are asked, they either give you a special offer and you guys work that off offline. I love that. There's one thing that you said, and I want to just highlight it again, because listeners, this will help you when you're talking to influencers. Elise said posting deliverables. That was what you really need to make sure in exchange. So if you're talking the talk with them, you want to make sure, let's discuss the posting deliverables. And can you just really quickly again pinpoint what our listeners could ask for in those social media posting deliverables? What would be the most frequent ones that they could request?
Absolutely. I think, you know, 10 high-res images that you can use across your social media, your website, your Airbnb listing, around 10. It doesn't have to be exactly, but I think that's a very fair number. One in-feed Instagram post tagging your Instagram account for your listing, and maybe 3 story frames, 3 or 5. That would be like a very kind of typical, you know, exchange of deliverables for a stay.
Love Should that. They ask for a blog post or something that gets them on that SEO train, or would they have to, would it be a longer stay, or what would sweeten the pot for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a longer stay, because blog posts are, you know, more work. It's a lot of research to like go through, even with all the filters, you know, that Airbnb has. Like, obviously I haven't stayed at all 10 of the Sedona Airbnbs in my blog post. I've stayed at a couple of them, but then you're just kind of going through and really like filtering what I think my readers would enjoy. So I would definitely include them for, if it was like a longer stay, I would include them in my travel guide as a recommended place to stay. And then if I was doing a separate, top Airbnbs in X location post, including them in there as well. So I think, yeah, absolutely. If it's like not, if it's for like a stay, not just like a one day shoot type of thing, I think it's reasonable to ask, like, will you be doing any blog coverage or travel guides from this? You know, can we make sure that my Airbnb is listed there too?
If I wanted to get in on this really hot Sedona article.
Yeah. That's what I'm like, tell us what you're looking for.
It already, well, like, I don't, maybe I have two different questions. Cause if it already exists, can I ask to be a part of that existing article?
Oh.
Or does that ruin your ranking?
It does not ruin my ranking. And I actually, I thinking back on it, I'm surprised I haven't had more Airbnb hosts doing this.
Oh, you might get an influx of that.
If you think you can, you know, knock somebody out of the top 10,
yeah,
we'll connect you with Elise. We'll have everything in the show notes there.
That's the name of the game, knocking people out of the top 10. I have had one very smart Airbnb host who emailed me during the pandemic. And she was like, I saw your Sedona Airbnb post. I noticed that it's on the first page of Google. I have this beautiful Airbnb. I would love to be included in the post. If you have any trips coming up, so smart. I was like, oh, dang, girl. Like, why aren't more people doing this?
I'm like, I'm going to hit the Googles when we get off this episode.
Yes. So she offered me a 2-night stay in exchange for being included in the blog post. And I actually, it's funny, I had just been to Sedona right before the pandemic hit. So I was like, I don't have any trips planned right now, but like, it's one of my favorite places. So we'll definitely be there in the future. And I'd love to connect with you then. So that's one way to do it. But she also, she didn't do this, but she could have been like, hey, I would love to offer you payment for inclusion in this article because I realize we're in a pandemic, or maybe you don't have a current trip to Sedona planned in this moment. You know, what would your rate be for that?
Wow. That is, this is good. This is really good.
And if you don't want to answer this question, we can totally leave it out. But what is a rate? Like, what is it, thousands of dollars? Is it, does it depend on the, like, what, and can you give us like levels?
Yeah. Yes. We don't want to, like, we wouldn't want to offend anybody, but we also don't want to like drain our bank accounts either. So what would
how would we
gauge what our offer should be if we wanted
fair
to pay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally happy to talk about numbers. I'm super transparent. I'm actually recording a podcast episode this week that's like an income report for my business because I'm just really passionate about encouraging women to talk about real numbers and rates and how they negotiate. It's a passion of mine. So I'm very happy to talk about specific numbers. For me, I would probably start at $1,000 for a post like that. That's ranking, you know, I think it's like number 5 after the, you know, the ads and stuff. So for a post like that, I would probably ask for $1,000. The thing with influencer rates is it's the wild, wild west. So you could have somebody with the same amount of page views or the same amount of Instagram followers that charges 2 times as much or 3 times as much. Like, you see rates all over the place. So for me personally, that is probably the number that I would start at for negotiating.
Okay. And just as we're kind of wrapping up that episode, I just want to ask, like, as a travel influencer, when you're looking for short-term rentals, what are some of those non-negotiables? Not as an influencer, let's say you and your husband are just, I mean, obviously you're probably taking pictures and documenting everything, but what are some things that you look for or that you've had really good experience with just in short-term rentals and Airbnbs since you've been traveling so much?
Yeah, I obviously look for places that are a vibe and aesthetic because, you know, I would love to be able to like snap a couple of photos, throw it up on my feed, share it on my Instagram stories. It's just naturally, you know, as a travel blogger, what I like to do. So I'm looking at the, you know, the aesthetic and the feel and the vibe of it. Just kind of like, for me, small amenities make a really big difference. So like, I want to know what kind of coffee maker you have. Because if it's like a crap coffee maker, I'm going to be miserable. I'm going to have to like...
And can you tell us which kind of coffee maker you're looking for? This is the what our listeners also want to know.
Right?
What do you want to see? What kind?
So I like, if I see an espresso machine, I'm thrilled. Like even a French press, like great. Any, a pour over, like basically anything besides just like a pot of coffee, I'm going to be super happy because I just, when I wake up in the morning, I just want some delicious coffee and I want to know that when I'm traveling there, that's going to be there for me. I also appreciate when the host already has the pods or the coffee or whatever in the cabinet. So I'm not thinking like, oh, we arrived and we're here late at night and in the morning there's no coffee. So that's a big one for me. And then I also look at the reviews to see if the beds are comfortable because I'm getting old, you guys. Like, my back hurts if it's not a comfortable bed. And like, I got things to do and places to shoot. I can't be limping along. So those are the two things that I check.
No, and think about it. Like, that's what people are, they're staying overnight. You got to make sure they're comfy. And then when they wake up, they want some coffee. No, we love that.
Use something that being in the episode, like back in the day, you could reach out to, and you use the Airbnb platform to reach out. Yep. So how today are you connecting with hosts?
Yeah, it's a lot harder today because I can't just directly message them within Airbnb. So sometimes I'll find rentals on Instagram. I feel like that's kind of the main way that I reach out to people. And because it's harder to connect directly through the platform, through Airbnb, I have done a lot less of those kind of like in-kind exchanges and stays because honestly, it's easier to find the right press contact for a hotel because like the email is right there on the website. Cool. So it did make it harder for me to do that, and which is a bummer because I loved being able to, you know, connect with hosts and share their properties.
I wonder if there's a way for really epic hosts with epic properties to connect with hotel press agents or like PR agencies to be included in
their list. Yeah.
Their list when influencers reach out. Because I used to work at a hotel, and you're right, our head of PR would connect bloggers with all the things, whether it's a meal in our bar or an overnight stay. And so to be connected with, now, a lot of the times, I guess the hotels that is their employee, but interesting. Elise, we need to solve this problem.
Yeah. There was a platform for a while that was connecting influencers with hosts because I actually looked at it a while ago. I don't even know if it's still in business because this was pre-pandemic, but they were trying to fill, you know, or that gap, fix that problem. But I know they were like not taking anybody new at the time when I had like inquired. They were like tapped out. And I think I was trying, as a host, I was trying to not, I mean, it was like wanted the property to be on there and like they were tapped out. So I don't know.
Would you search hashtags like hashtag Sedona Airbnb, Sedona rental? Like, is that if and when you do search for rentals, that's how you would do it?
Yeah, that would be, probably like hashtag Sedona Airbnb. Definitely. Yeah. And Instagram search functionality has gotten a little bit better. Like it doesn't even have to be a hashtag anymore. Like you could just type in Sedona Airbnb and you'll get posts that have kind of, they've used that language probably in the caption or something like that. But that's another way to do it.
And listeners, this is why it's important to put your Instagram handle in your Airbnb listing. So if people, you know, if Elise is going through and looking for places to stay and then she sees your Instagram handle, she can reach out to you that way instead of, you know, not making Airbnb angry. And
or maybe have a hashtag. If you're nervous about using a handle, you could have hashtag, I don't know, the sunflower Airbnb, whatever it is, right? In your short-term rental listing on whatever platform it is. But also, hosts, reach out to these influencers. Have it be like something you do quarterly just to get yourself some ranking and some content and some photos to freshen up your business. Remember, you are a business. So if hotels think it's important to have, you know, PR companies like you yourself, you wear many hats as a business owner. You are your own press agent and reach out to people you know, like, and trust and respect because influencers are obviously easier to find on Instagram, especially local ones, and strike up a conversation. Is it okay to slide in your DMs and say, hey?
Absolutely. Yeah. Hit me up on Instagram. I'm at WTFab. And you can also do a search on my website. It's whatthefab.com. And you can search for your location, see if I have any posts that are, you know, up there for your location. And if you have other questions, like you can always, I'm super open. You can DM me, email me. I'm here.
I'm so interested. I think we want to go read these blogs that Elise has put together, and it'll help you, listeners. Maybe if it's not Elise, you'll at least know how to reach out to those local influencers or whoever you're going to invite to your house. So this has been,
so good, Elise. Thank you for being so transparent and open and giving us all the great ideas. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are.
Thanks for visiting. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. head on over to the show notes for this episode at thanksforvisiting.me. If you're looking to take your listing to the next level and show your guests how much you care, be sure to check out our line of thoughtful hosting products. From hosting checklists to custom mugs to toilet paper stickers, we've got you covered. And if you love our show, remember, sharing is caring. Please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week. Thanks for visiting.
Ever wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.